Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz from the Science of Psychotherapy, and I'm here with our managing editor and master of lots of different things, Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Luke. That's really good. I should leave now. I've had a good introduction. Thanks, Matt. Hi, everybody.
Now, we're doing something a little bit unusual. We've had this will be the third podcast we've had in a row where it's just been Matt and Richard. But we really felt that this week we needed to touch base with you guys and just talk about a big change that is coming up for us at the Science of Psychotherapy. So we thought we'd slip this in, but promising next week we'll have a guest.
Yes, that's right. But this week, what we do, our guest is change, growth, and the future. It's something that has been, I mean, we know we've been working on this, and people may have been noticing that the Neuropsychotherapist as a magazine, it's been talking a little bit more than just about neuroscience. It's been talking about quantum. It's been talking about immune systems. It's been talking about gut biota. It's been talking about teaching. It's been talking a lot more about practice and the implication and the application of different ideas and theories. And that's because the science of psychotherapy, which has become the overarching title of our online presence, is now going to be the title of the magazine. So yes. Next month, June, will be the last edition of the Neuropsychotherapist, heralding the first edition of the Science of Psychotherapy.
That's right. And I'm very excited about this broadening of our scope. We did start with the neuropsychotherapist wanting to be very niche in that neuroscience, you know, applied neuroscience area. But we just can't help but to embrace so many other aspects of interdisciplinary science. And so to serve you better.
Yeah,
we're broadened. We feel like we have to be honest with what we're covering and title our magazine accordingly.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's just a natural progression. It was good to start in the frame, but It doesn't matter how much you talk about neuroscience, you have to talk about the human behavior related to it. No matter how much you talk about human behavior, you have to talk about the neuroscience. And if you're talking about neuroscience, you have to talk about what's happening in the immune system. And in the lifestyle practices, it's really not forced itself upon us, but it kept smacking us in the head and saying, yep. Come on, Richard, Matt, wake up, open up. And so it's exciting, but it really wasn't hard. It wasn't hard for us to see the reality of this. Now, What I did was sort of all on my own. I forgot to tell you, Matt. But anyway, I did tell you eventually. I just thought, so if we're going to change, where are we changing to and why are we changing and what are the possibilities?
Yeah.
So I whizzed up an email and I sent out to about 20 or 30 of our good friends and colleagues around the world. I just said, can you write me a few paragraphs on where to now?
Yes.
Just that simple question. And can you send it to me in the next week or so? Because I wanted something fresh and sort of just emergent, not something that they sat down and pored over and worried about. Now, of course, the trouble was that meant that a few people had to say, oh, look, I'm sorry, I'm a bit busy to do it, but, you know, I love it. Everybody said they loved the idea. And anyway, it looks like we'll have 15, maybe 20 of these submissions from wonderful people, you know, John Arden, Lou Cosolino, Bonnie Badnock's written a beautiful piece, which we're using as the last word. Stephen Porges said, oh, I'm too busy, but can I write one for you later? We've got Terry Marks Tarlow. We've got new friends like Eric Beeson and Tadia Valise. My gosh. So this is going to be an exciting issue. And what we thought to do today is maybe just introduce a couple of them.
Yes, brilliant.
What I'd like to read Lou Cosolino's because it's short and it's pithy, and maybe we just have a little bit of a chat about it, and hopefully you guys out there listening might have some thoughts and comments that you want to stick on the discussion board. We'd love to see that.
Okay, brilliant. So Yeah. What did Lou have to say?
So, okay, I'll read Lou. So this is me pretending to be Lou Cozzolino. He says, it's encouraging to see the shift of focus that your change of magazine title suggests. It's important to understand that there is no neuropsychotherapy or any specific form of therapy that the neuroscientific research supports over another. All of the major schools of therapy, CBT, psychodynamic, client-centered, DBT, humanistic existential, help some of the people some of the time. From a neuroscientific perspective, when any therapy works, it's because the therapist has managed to stimulate plasticity and positive change in a client's brain. And because neuroscience is now being included into clinical discussions, we're all expected to be fluent in the basics of brain-behavior relationships. Gone are the days where a narrowly trained therapist, armed with a limited view of psychopathology and a few techniques in their toolbox, can be considered a state-of-the-art practitioner. There is a lot of sophisticated psychological theory, relevant research information, and solid integrative thinking that needs to be included in our thinking. Traditional concepts like attachment, trauma, transference, shame, and affect regulation are now all deeply informed by our understanding of evolution, neural development, systemic arousal, epigenetics, and neuroplasticity. Thank you, Lou.
Brilliant. And the thing that comes to mind immediately is in our last conversation with John Arden, he basically said exactly the same thing, using some different words. And for my, when you asked me myself, you know, to give my opinion of what's next, you know, I very much resonate exactly with what Lou is saying here.
It's surprising how much of this particular concept of the, what is about the future is more. And I don't think it's more as in an overbearing. And I think Lou puts the point out here. We need to find what suits us. The you need to add things. These things need to be included. But there is just more. And that simplistic idea that you can just learn a protocol, reproduce it, and the statistics say that it will work most of the time, and that's all you have to worry about, that is clearly changing.
Yes, and as I've said, and if people are interested, I've put my comment up on the website a few days ago. I see that this is very much moving back into our, we've talked about this before, our right hemisphere perspective of things, this broadening of our awareness, this broadening of more of the more of the different science, and getting away from this very singular, linear, again, decontextualized, rote way of doing things.
Yeah, this idea of working with specifics, but then flowing back into the right brain for creativity and improvisation and conceptualization, then flowing back into the left side for application and you know, details, because you certainly can't just, no one's suggested that everyone becomes these sort of airy-fairy, non-specific, undetailed therapists. It's more to the point that things become more embodied and more rich and more centered around practical applications, but that these applications emerge from a vastly wider scope of information and experience.
I like what he says here: state of the art practitioner that embraces all of these concepts together and in new and creative ways, as we're finding as we report in the science of psychotherapy. Brilliant.
Yeah. And the science of psychotherapy, the science, the knowledge and knowing of psychotherapy. That's what we're moving ourselves to. Not so much, I mean, I think we've always been saying this, but now we're making it a clear statement.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's give an example of showing how different brains in different places around the world are kind of framing themselves around similar ideas. You've got one there.
Okay, so from Laurie. Russell Chapin.
Now, she's a professor of counselling in, where's she, in Berkeley? Berkeley?
Bradley University.
In Bradley, yeah, brilliant.
Let me read her offering here. The counselling field seems to be coming full circle with its wellness, prevention and neurocounselling emphasis. Neurocounselling may be the solidifying component that bridges the brain, body and behaviours, demonstrating how many of our current mental health challenges have physiological underpinnings. Excellent talk therapy will be even more efficacious when neurocounselling skills of emotional and physiological self-regulation are taught to clients as a first-level intervention. Then clients can initiate their personal safety needs and be more developmentally ready and receptive to engage in talk therapy. Without considering it and better understanding the brain and body, helping professionals will not be as effective. How can we problem solve with clients without looking at the brain and body systems that impact our clients? Empowering clients with neuroinformed education offers knowledge that may explain possible answers to certain behaviours. Viewing our system from a chemical, electrical and physical properties, well, this offers strategies for better client locus of control. Consistently, when clients begin practicing self-regulation skills, they exclaim, "If I can control my skin temperature, surely I can control other major problems." Understanding how our brain and body work together and what dysregulates our system is a must for the counselling field to grow and to thrive.
There's so many interesting elements there that trigger my curiosity and my interest. I love the first paragraph there, the mental health challenges that mm-hmm. have physiological underpinnings.
Yes.
You know, yep. Not physiological causes or not physiological things, fix that, but underpinnings, stuff that's underneath it. I'm not sure whether Laurie's speaking very strongly from the framework of systems theory, but mm-hmm. that certainly is an element of it, that we have underpinnings. And this other part where she says empowering clients with neuroinformed education can offer knowledge to them that explains possible answers. So offer knowledge to them. You know, it's this, I'm giving to the client, not instructing them, you know, saying you should behave like this because your brain's doing that. I think that's what she's getting at there.
So this point about complex systems is so important because this comes up again and again, doesn't it? Mm. That we are dealing with probably the most complex system that we know about.
Well, I'll talk about a bit more of that in a sec because my one actually refers to that. So I might read that out in a minute or so.
Sure.
But as we look here at Laurie and the sort of, here we've got two brains. Laurie's a lot younger, I think, than dear Lou. And Lou's my age, so everyone's younger than us, including you. But there's this co-realization that there is more that needs to be known, that we're not using anything, as Lou says. There is the neuroscientific research says that there is no specific form of therapy that is better supported than another. It depends on how it works with the client. And there's Laurie sort of saying that clients are self-empowered, are having self-realizations when they when they find they can do some biofeedback to alter their skin temperature.
Right.
And just suddenly they're doing their own metaphoric associative relationship, saying, well, if I've got this skill, surely I can utilize that elsewhere. And I agree with her. I think that's exactly the way nature works. It doesn't just give us one skill everywhere. This is what I learned in linguistics, that we can create an entire language out of a small set of rules and organizing principles and basic symbols. It's and such as it is, so as it is with our therapeutic potential, the possibilities, which is also a word that Laurie uses there.
Yes, and when you're working with the system along the lines of its own natural capacity and even leaning to heal, then you're not going to have to work as hard.
Mm.
It's the working smarter, not harder principle.
I mean, who knows what an individual, a client, will do with the pieces of information that you offer them. I'm assuming that the therapist is aware that the client is receptive and interested in this stuff, you know, not mm-hmm. ramming it down their throat. It's you're giving it responsively, yeah.
Okay. So, Richard, what did you have to say about this?
Oh, I think, what's next? I did. I did. All right. It's a little bit longer than Lose and Laurie's, but Richard Hill said, there is an underlying principle to the shift that's represented by the name change of this magazine. We're shifting our attention from a specific neuroscientific discipline to an inclusive and integrative engagement with a whole grab bag of scientific knowledge, information, and practical experience. Our current problem lies in that we have been taught to think the wrong way. And perhaps that's a little excessive, but we have become overly entrained with the idea that we live in a predictable world that can be analyzed to produce predictable outcomes. Now, this misinterpretation of Newtonian physics, where fundamentals were described about the movement of matter, the effect of inertia in movement, and the relationship between force, mass, and acceleration, has led many to believe that they can control the world. The power of mathematics to create predictable outcomes based on these and other rules of motion have enabled amazing things like space travel to occur, but also the miscomprehension that life can be simple and predictable if you just do things in a certain way. What we have learned is that very small changes in circumstances at the beginning and or during an experience can have wildly unpredictable results, and sometimes very little effect at all. The outcome can be confusing and surprising. Although that description's a little bit simplistic, this is the experiential reality that we know to be true, which is better explained by complexity theory than the unrealistic safety of a predictable linear causal world. Rather than predictability, the real world is much more about possibility and the emergence of qualities and quantities from a self-organizing mixing together of all the elements involved. And the exciting thing about a complex system is that it is sometimes possible to individuate or differentiate single elements and explore them independently of the emergent thing that they're a part of. It's possible to examine the carburetor of a car, or the liver of a person, or the leaf of a tree. The value of this was described most eloquently by one of the early thinkers in thermodynamics, complexity, and chaos theory, Ilya Prigogine. He said, differentiation enables further processes that would be impossible in an undifferentiated medium to manifest its potentialities. Unquote. The key, however, is not to hold that element out of the system, as we do all too often with differentiated therapeutic practices and academic disciplines. It's time to return these isolated silos into the complex system of life so that we can see what happens. Now, my suggestion as the way forward is to encourage and engage our curiosity, not only as an inquiring state of mind, but also as a state of being that is always searching for the personal meanings and the possibilities that have yet to be realized. The real beauty of what we see on the surface, the emergent properties, is that it is almost certainly just the tip of an iceberg of contributing elements that have led to the emergence of something obvious. This is why a symptom is not the problem to be fixed, but an indicator of something else beneath and within. Everything is something, but even more exciting is that everything is also potentially composed of other things, of something more, and is full of unrealized potential. So where to now? I suggest that we move toward and beyond this growing edge of possibility, and that we reintegrate what we know, what we feel, and who we are as living beings. Who knows what will happen? And I, for one, am excited to find out.
Very good. And I'm excited to find out as well. That is brilliant.
So that's bringing in those ideas of complexity, but trying to just roll the theory in amongst our experiential framework of ordinary life.
Makes me want to now name the magazine The Curiosity of the Science of Psychotherapy.
Yes, that's all right. I shall write a book about that soon. Okay. We'll do it as quickly as I can.
Well, some people might, you know, feel a little bit overwhelmed in the direction that things are going, because we are embracing you know, so many different disciplines, and there's so much to talk about, and there's so many unknowns. It is a very complex thing that we're talking about, and it's more comfortable to silo down.
And what's wonderful is the last word in the magazine is a piece written by Bonnie Badenoch,
mm-hmm.
who's our lovely friend from the US, who's so wonderful in trauma and working with attachment and interpersonal neurobiology. And I asked her, you know, could you just write a piece? Now, Bonnie's a beautiful writer, and she actually was my writing mentor in the Gaines group in early years. She taught me how to. I'd send her a piece, and she'd say, "What a lovely group of ideas! Could you write me just one?" But anyway, she was wonderful. But she just sat down, and in a flow of consciousness, she turned out about 1,600 words. And so we've put that as the last word, and exactly the sort of stuff you're talking about there. How do we engage with this flood of information and still make it meaningful and purposeful? And her article, which together we decided can be titled Responsive Presence,
okay,
is something that everybody should read. There's some lovely stuff. There's some lovely stuff in this. John Arden's article talks again about his book, but brings us up and gives us some just rapid fire bits of information about the sorts of things that affect the brain and the brain effects in the body. It's absolutely wonderful. I've got a marvelous piece coming in from some friends of mine in Singapore, my friend Jeffrey Poe, talking about mindfulness and saying, I'm not sure you guys have really sort of got it right, really, which is so interesting to hear these other perspectives. I'm hoping that we can get something from Sharif Darwish in Egypt, but you know, he's a bit pressed for time, but if not, he'll write us something afterwards.
Okay.
This diversity.
Brilliant.
This diversity. You've encouraged this enormously, and I've been so keen to come on board with it.
Okay. Really looking forward to it. Well, the magazine continues, but it's the name change, really, that we're wanting to emphasize.
And it evolves. It'll evolve. I'm not sure whether the butterfly image is very good, because that implies the neuropsychotherapist was a bit of a slug. But that's not true.
Not at all.
But it's an evolution. I think that's right.
I think we're able now to really spread our wings, if we can continue with the metaphor of the butterfly, and really soar to new heights with the new title of The Science of Psychotherapy. We can embrace a lot more, I think.
And we're declaring that we accept it.
Yep.
And I think this will change the perspective for the readers, but also I think for the authors. And we'll have people more encouraged to write about various areas, and find that the science of psychotherapy is a great venue for a wide range. What I say, a whole grab bag of ideas, and I think it's a bag to be grabbed.
Absolutely,
it's not that's what we should do. Stop being afraid of information. Have a go. Put it out there. Get criticized for your information. You know, get commented and argued with. That's how we move forward. That's how we progress.
Absolutely. All right. Brilliant. Looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Richard, for pulling all of this together for us in this magazine. And
pleasure.
And thank you, everybody out there, for tuning in and listening to us. And I'm excited. I hope you're excited. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for becoming subscribers to this magazine. We couldn't exist without you.
And we better just do a quick one on that. So I hope this magazine will encourage some new subscribers, and perhaps some of those people who've said, oh, I don't know, maybe it's not going in the direction I want, they'll come back. But do remember that a lot of you are listening to this, you can just come in and get a particular issue.
Absolutely.
And it's just $4 or $5 or something, which is fantastic. So we'd love to have you in the fold. But if you're participating with us, then that's as good as any. And it's really helpful for us to know that the magazine is going out there and being enjoyed.
Brilliant. Thanks, Richard. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you next week. We'll have a guest on next week. Looking forward to that. And thanks for tuning in to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast.
And that's enough from me. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.